Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode in our Deliberate Practice series on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me is our guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, about week six for a lot of people. We are past the midpoint of the season. And, you know, it's a lot of fun looking at all the different ways we could get creative to make our team better. It's something you and I talk about quite a bit, thinking outside the box a little bit. And even at this time of the year, we can do some things and introduce some things I think that'll be new and fresh and even address some of the issues that we might be having.
Yeah, that midpoint of the season is also interesting because obviously we've put in a lot of good work in the preseason, and you know, most coaches are a fairly higher workload early in the season, and as we get to the midpoint, we might start tapering down some of the workload, maybe reducing some of the contact in our practice to try to keep the guys fresh for the end of the year and a long season and hopefully a deep playoff run. So how do we address some of those core areas when we start to remove those bits and pieces of practice? And we think that it's a good time to address this subject because of that natural kind of progression and periodization of our practices.
Right. And so the theme today is finish. And it's, you know, to finish a play. And looking at the different elements that go into that. And, you know, before we got to talking, Andy, I think you described kind of this dichotomy that we've created here with how we're looking at practice. And don't get me wrong, I think what we're doing right now is really good. It's good to be able to taper off. It's good to be able to have some levels of contact. And as you said, and I'll let you explain it, you know, there probably is not that confusion for the player, but they're probably, with what we've done, there's probably some things we need to address.
Yeah, so this came out of a conversation we were having about specificity. And, you know, coaches will say, like, hey, this drill builds bad habits. Well, players are actually really pretty smart, and they can often tell the difference between practice and a game. So if you think about it, we practice under different rules than we play the game. So especially if we're using a lot of control or a lot of thud tempo, you know, our players aren't going to the ground. They're not finishing plays. Now, conceptually, our players know this. I've never seen a missed tackle on a game day where a player comes to the sideline and says, oh, sorry, coach, I forgot it was a game. I thought it was thud. So I hit him, I wrapped him up, and then I let him go. You know, I've never seen a wide receiver or running back or any ball carrier stop running in the middle of a play and come to the sideline and be like, oh, shoot, coach, I forgot it wasn't tag off. So our players are able to transition between drills and practices and knowing different game rules and the game day fairly seamlessly, fairly easily. Human beings are pretty smart creatures. But there's definitely the side of it that when we are practicing at those thud and control tempos, we're removing the finish from the game. And that's for health and safety reasons. That's for keep and not in the big, giant health and safety all the time. Sometimes it is maybe with our helmet contact. But sometimes it's, you know, we don't want our offensive linemen doing a torque and a throw finish to our scout team. Because what if we throw that guy into the guard next to us and we get a leg roll up, we cross a pile and we lose one of our starters. So we're doing a good job of keeping them on the feet. But when we watch game film, we love the guy that finished. We know our players have the mentality to make that switch come Friday night, but how do we coach some of the physical or technical little pieces that actually make up the finish when we're not trying to do that in practice because of our unique practice rule set? And that's where I just think it takes some creativity to how can we recreate some situations or how can we exaggerate some things to make sure that our finish is ingrained in those guys and they have the tools and the skills needed, not just the mentality needed.
That's exactly it. And we've talked about these type of drills. I think just going back to, you know, training away penalties, right? And getting your player that feel of, you know, the technique, his technique kind of becoming undone or starting to lose a block and then being able to reestablish feet and hands, and or, you know, putting a player in a stalemate, you know, different type of situation, but putting a player in a stalemate and how do you regain leverage and win from there. And like you said, all the different torquing. And so I think we know how to simulate those with the offensive line and getting people away, because I've had those situations before, right? I can remember being, you know, in meetings with our offense explaining, like, guys, we love when you do this, but this is our player here, and, you know, we don't want guys on the ground, and we, you know, look how he rolls into the back of this other guy, etc. So it is looking at this in a way that we're working on the finish components, we're working on these physical skills, yet we're still maintaining that safer environment. So that's the kind of the objective behind what we're talking about today when we mention these specific drills. And you're going to get it kicked off for us with the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, so defensively, obviously, we want to finish the play. We want to finish the tackle. We want to dominate through the deck, as we say in the advanced tackle system. You know, we want to make sure that we complete the tackle all the way to the ground and our guys are in control of it. And sometimes in those on-game-time situations, right, the other team's running back, they're getting coached too. He's not trying to fall down. So we have a bit of grapple. We have a bit of tussle in there. We're doing some work. And one of the things that I think is most important for great finishes on tackles is actually decision-making. So we'll put it like this, that if I win the initial collision, the chances are I'm probably going to drive finish. And these could be simulated by any of our traditional, you know, drive finish drills on a bag. We can do them band resisted. Crash mats work great. I mean, I've seen teams that don't have the resources, you know, stacking up bags and shields to make their own crash pads so that we can drive guys to the ground and feel pretty good about it. But what happens when we don't win that initial collision is we need a different finish. So sometimes we strike at the thigh level, and we don't win the initial collision, and we're not going to be able to drive through, and we're going to transition it to a roll finish. Or we may strike high, and we kind of get in that stalemate, and then we have to find a way to grapple the player down. So I'm a big fan of these decision-making drills, and we use a crash mat for these, if you have one, but where you'll put a player, and he's going to be engaged or, you know, 6 inches away, just pre-engaged from a teammate. And the teammate's going to be holding a shield, and we can do it for the lower level or we can do it for the upper level. And with the lower level, we simply hold a step over so that it's, you know, on our outside of our leg, providing a great big cushion surface so that the tacklee doesn't get a Charlie horse. But on the strike-in, the tacklee is going to alternate between resistance and no resistance, so that if he gets resistance, then the player is going to transition to a different technique. So to envision this, I'm striking my player on the level 2 tackle. He's holding a step over in front of his thigh pad to protect his own quad. He hits, and I'm either leaning into it and really kind of bracing that quad and giving him resistance. And if that's the case, then the player is going to transition to a roll tackle. And we have some great film of this from the Seattle Seahawks doing it. The tweak that I like to make is sometimes they don't provide resistance, and then we're going to ask our guys just to go ahead and drive finish and take them back down on the mat. So now we're working 2 tackles for 1 and that dynamic decision-making based off of feel. On the level 3 tackle, which is going to be our hips to numbers upper body tackle, the same thing. If we do not provide a lot of resistance on the initial strike, we're going to go ahead and drive through and finish. If our player does provide resistance, and I'm talking about putting up a huge fight and really not trying to go over onto the crash pad, we're going to transition into our hook and handle technique, where we're going to hook the body to control it, and then we're going to drop, we're going to pick that knee for our handle technique, and then take them over on the mat. And thanks to Coach Digg, we have some great video of this one. But we're going to work on 3 different finishes inside of 2 different drills, and each one has an A-B option. So very limited contact. Like I said, you can start them pre-engaged and just provide resistance or not. You can do it at, you know, 6 inches or a foot before that initial contact is made. But our thought, and I think we've talked about this a lot, is that dynamic decision-making is really what makes great finishers because they're using the appropriate technique for the situation. So do I drive or do I roll on the level two tackle, or do I drive or do I grapple and hook and handle for the level three finish? That can give your players a lot of confidence because they know that no matter what situation they get in on game day, they're going to have a technique to finish it. And that's what I think doesn't get replicated in our thud and our control level drills, because everyone is releasing pressure on collision. So all those collisions feel the same, and we're not exactly sure what technique I might have had to use had this been a live situation.
Andy, I think that's a phenomenal example for defensive finish and how you create it in practice. Yet at the same time, we're maintaining that idea of we're going to keep our players safe, we're going to limit contact, and we're going to do this in a smart way. I've talked before on the podcast about the offensive side of the ball, and especially as the week would wear on, is we really got big into, you know, those 50-50 balls, those balls downfield of, you know, giving one side of the ball a right away to the ball, essentially declaring, you know, the offense wins this particular drill. And I did that, really. It was that idea of we had something happen. We had one of our starting receivers go up 50-50 ball against a scout team guy who, you know, wants to make a play and be a hero, and they get all twisted up, and he comes down and strains his MCL, and he's out for, you know, this was a Thursday, he's out Saturday. Not a good situation to be in. So we started giving, you know, right away to the ball, and I know there's a lot of schools out there do. I've seen it in college practices, and so we implemented that. But now what we've taken away is, you know, the ability to feel and fight for a 50-50 ball. So how can you create that situation where you don't put your players, again, at risk of coming down, turning an ankle, twisting a knee, et cetera? So the answer is, you know, let's not worry about the jump portion of this. Your guy's going to be able to jump and do things, but let's focus on the upper half, right? So you can create some of that 50-50 ball feel, the fight for the ball, the fight for positioning, by putting them on their knees. Put them on their knees, you know, right next to each other. You could really, you know, mess around with how they are in relationship to each other. And you're going to put a, you know, the ball, you're going to throw it right in between those guys, you know, and allow them to, you know, position with their hands or position with, you know, a shoulder. I mean, when you look at a guy winning a ball, I mean, he's essentially done something to put his body, his upper body, in an advantageous position. So to be able to get a feel for that by something that's just on the ground, and you can add components to it. Maybe you want more distract. How do you do that? Well, you could get, you know, guys with pool noodles out in front of that, you know, something that's not going to knock down the path of the ball, but, you know, in case it gets hit, it might move it one direction or the other. And again, adjusting your eyes, adjusting your hands to the football, all good things that you want your players to be able to do. And it, again, doesn't have to be a lot of time spent on this. Could be a quick 5-minute period, one time a week, but again, keeping them in tune with that physical feel for being able to fight for the football without putting their lower body at risk, their lower body joints at risk by, you know, coming down in an awkward way because you are fighting for the football.
Well, first off, I love that idea. Obviously, the jump and the land when guys get, you know, tangled up, that's when people land awkwardly, the ankle, the knee, any of that stuff. I think we've all probably seen or felt, you know, victim to the story you just told. But when you actually think about it, when you're in that kneeling position, especially if you have your legs really close together, you're kind of, your knees are touching, it actually feels like a pretty unstable base. And you're not going to mimic, you know, a guy with a 40-inch vertical jump, but it's definitely not as stable as standing there on your feet. So you kind of get some natural sway between the players' bodies, and they're actually fighting for body control and balance. And I really think that's probably the best way to simulate that. And then I love the idea, because I'd never thought about that, but changing the orientation of the defender. So we could be shoulder to shoulder, we could be shoulder to chest at 90 degrees. But, you know, it'd probably even make a fairly fun competition. I mean, I bet you the boys would have a good go at it and have a laugh as they're fighting for the ball and who wins and who loses, and talk about strong hands and, you know, attacking the football, going to get the football, even in that mimicking space. I'm positive there is a ton of good receiver fundamentals inside of that little drill that's also helping the guys to get comfortable with going up, being a little unstable, having physical contact. and having to focus on the actual catch.
Yeah, you think about just the variations that can cause the different dynamics that you might see. So maybe it's, who doesn't matter if it's the defender or offensive guy, because they're both fighting for the ball in space. You put one guy whose shoulder pad is slightly in front of the other. And so that guy has to, he can't go through that shoulder pad to get the football because that's a penalty. So now he's going to have to work and dip that shoulder back up and under to get in a position where he's at an advantage. And again, doing it with, like you said, that instability of, you know, being on your knees and a little bit more upright, and now still creating that feel for an understanding, which you have to do, especially with your upper body, to manipulate it to make a legal catch where you're not interfering with the other guy. So I think it's something you could play around with and discover all the different types of things you might see on some of those 50-50 balls and recreate that situation. And that brings us to the special team side of things. And this one, I think, is one you borrow a little bit from the defensive side, but certainly the tackle and bringing a ball carrier down, getting to a ball carrier, is an important part of special teams. But again, typically we're not going to go out there and go full go on our special team. So a way we can, again, emphasize finish, getting to the ball, all the things we want out of these plays.
Yeah, so, you know, on good defensive football, we always talk about numbers to the ball. And on special teams, there's a little bit of a dichotomy, it's been the word of the day, where we want to make sure we're spread and we're casting this good net across the field, but hopefully we're also not making a ton of one-on-one tackles. Now, we're going to train the heck out of our players. We want all of our guys to be comfortable and confident and really efficient in making one-on-one tackles. But we want a pursuit of a ball carrier, like, you know, a pack of wolves or sharks in the water, whatever, you know, the terminology your team uses is. So we want to get multiple guys to the ball. So this is a drill we call our four hands drill. And what we're going to do is we're going to play at a thud tempo. But once the first player thuds up our runner here, and, you know, they're getting into that little grapple situation, the play isn't over until a second player tags off as well. So what we're actually looking at is the tackler has both arms around, he has his clamps and grip in, and then once the second player comes in and gets both hands on the runner, now we have four hands on the runner and the drill is over. So it's just a simple tweak that does two things that I really like. One, even though we're staying up, we're really addressing the clamp, the grip, and the grapple portion of the first tackler in, making sure he stays connected, stays strong, stays really solid in the tackle. That's key for us so we don't have broken tackles and we limit yards after contact, because we're able to win those little skills inside of the tackle after the initial strike. Then we're also going to be focusing on really trying to get that mentality of numbers to the ball. So that second and third guy are continuing to close to the football and not saying, oh, well, Billy got him and coach is going to blow the whistle because this is just a thud drill, so I'm going to start to pull up. If everyone knows the play isn't over, the drill, the rep isn't over until we get four hands on, now our second and third guy are continuing to hustle in so they can, you know, complete that a variation of the drill, and the whistle can actually blow and we can line up again. So how does it work on finish? Well, we're working on that finish mentality of numbers to the ball, gang tackling, and swarming. We're also working on one of the key aspects that allows us to finish an open field tackle, which is that clamp, grip, and grapple. Because in the open field, you know, it's difficult. We don't often get that perfect, you know, small space shoulder strike. Like we have a running back, you know, coming into a small gap in the line of scrimmage. Sometimes we get stuck in those grapple situations because, well, he's the starting returner for a reason. He's shifty. You know, we may only get a clamp or a grip and not a good, great shoulder contact, or we might not be in the most square position. So we're reinforcing that fight mentality to dig, to hold on, to get more, to control the runner until our buddies get there. And on game day, that'll show up when we have guys working those clamps, fighting, holding on, waiting for the cavalry to get there, and players 2, 3, and 4 are still hustling. That's when we can get some knockback tackles through the swarm and a mentality of numbers to the ball. So it's just a little tweak to the drill to make sure guys aren't pulling up early and they're doing what all coaches want, which is hustling the entire play and finishing to the ball.
Andy, some outstanding examples again today. And the thought again, the whole design behind this series is to really think about how you're practicing and what you really want out of your drills. What's the ultimate result? Thinking about this is what we need on game day and kind of reverse engineering that whole process. So today, focused on the finish, and again, just a few examples from each side of the ball, but to put that thought process to work for your players and to, again, get more out of them, get exactly what you want to see on game day. And the only way you could do it is to work it in practice. So again, some outstanding examples today on the finish.
No, it's a great topic because it is one of the most challenging things I think coaches have to face is how do we work those, you know, back 80-90% mechanics when we're not going to allow our players to do it in practice. So, again, I'm sure there are coaches who will come up with some great creative ideas. We encourage you to share how you're trying to help finish plays without your players going to ground or while limiting collision loads as we get later in the season. And these are some that have worked for myself and for you, and hopefully somebody finds value in them and uses them and shares them out on social because we'd love to see them.
Absolutely. And you can find Andy on Twitter at USAFootballMT. I'm at Coach K Grabowski, and we have our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Remember to check out our systems, which includes our free shoulder tackling system, which we put together with the Seattle Seahawks, our advanced tackling system, and our system for blocking and defeating blocks, all at footballdevelopment.com. Andy, enjoy this week of football. I'm sure we'll come up with some more ideas to share with coaches here on the podcast and in the Deliberate Practice Series.
As always, love talking ball, love sharing ideas, get better every week. And to the coaches out there, again, good luck this week. Good luck as the season progresses. We're into league time. We're fighting for playoff first. So hopefully some of these drills will help you out, and look forward to talking next week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.